I'm Philip Harold, Interim Dean of the School of Education and Social Sciences. And on behalf of Robert Morris University, I'm pleased to offer a welcome to our campus to all of you here, plus a special welcome to those watching online via our web streams. For this primary debate for the 44th Pennsylvania House District election. Many thanks to the members of the League of Women Voters of Greater Pittsburgh and the students in Century Media and the RMU Political Science Club who have worked to make tonight's event happen. After the debate is over, you can watch the replay on the Facebook page of the League of Women Voters of Greater Pittsburgh, as well as listen to a podcast of the debate with extra interviews on rmuradio.com. Thanks especially to the candidates for agreeing to come to this forum tonight and participating in this free exchange of ideas, which is something that makes our democracy vibrant and strong. It's now my pleasure to introduce the director of the League of Women Voters of Greater Pittsburgh, Christina Boyger, who will moderate the debate tonight. Thank you.
Hi, thank you. Thank you, Dr. Harold. Thank you to Robert Morris for hosting and the political science students that are here and helping League with timing and question sorting and greeting. I'm Chris Berger. I'm a board member of the League of Women Voters, and I'll be your moderator tonight. The League of Women Voters is a nonpartisan organization that does not support, endorse, or oppose any political party or candidate. Rather, the League encourages citizens to play an informed and active role in government. One of the ways we accomplish this is by registering new voters, which we are actually doing here tonight. So if you are over the age of 18 and you are a citizen, please register to vote with our volunteers at the table outside in the hallway. Remember to vote for the May primary. The deadline to register to vote is actually in 3 days. So please register to vote if you're not already. Your attendance here tonight and those viewing on our live stream show your interest in being an educated, informed voter when you cast your ballot in the Republican primary on May 15th. If you would like to educate yourself more on the candidates that are running for various offices in your district, please visit the League of Women Voters website, 411.org. This is an online guide to all the candidates that answer the same three questions, and it gives you a side-by-side comparison of their views and how they answer the questions. So it's a real nifty tool to educate yourself further on the candidates. Since this is a midterm primary election, the enthusiasm to get to the polls and to vote is lower than in presidential years. As a citizen, it is our right and our tremendous responsibility to vote in each and every election. So please vote on May 15th and again in November, and encourage your friends and families and neighbors to vote as well. On behalf of the League of Women Voters, I'd like to welcome the candidates here tonight for the PA House Representative in District 44. We would actually, we would like to also acknowledge the Democratic nominee, but she has no challengers, so she won't be permitted to speak. But we'd like to just acknowledge Michelle Knoll, who's here today in the audience. All right, and now on to our program. In keeping with the League's goal of transparency and civil discourse, the rules for our forum are printed in your program and have been agreed upon by all the candidates. You have received a small card in which to write a question from the ushers and the greeters today. If you have a question any time during the debate, write it on your card, hold it up, and one of our ushers will pick it up and take it over to our question sorters who are here. They consist of Robert Morris students and League members. They will consolidate duplicate questions and review the questions for clarity, relevance, and civility. Because of time constraints, we may not get to all of your questions, but we'll do our best. I'm going to prioritize questions according to importance as much as possible. Each candidate will have a chance to answer each question, with each person having 1 minute to respond. There will be no time given for rebuttals. If a candidate wishes to respond to another candidate's statements, he or she will need to use the time from the answer to the next question. I will be asking questions in a rotating manner so that each candidate will have a chance to be the first to answer a question. Robert Morris students will act as timers, and they will use cards to alert myself and the candidates when they have 30 seconds, 15 seconds, and when to stop. And they're sitting right here. See? Thanks. As a courtesy, please turn off all cell phones, cameras, and other recording devices. The content of this forum is the property of the League of Women Voters of Greater Pittsburgh. The forum is being live streamed to the League of Women Voters of Greater Pittsburgh's Facebook. And after the event has concluded, you can look it up on our Facebook page to view and share. Please remember that this is not a campaign event, but rather an opportunity for people to hear the views of all the candidates so that you can determine how to cast your ballot. Therefore, please do not applaud, call out, or otherwise express your support or criticism of any candidate during this forum. I will ask for quiet if that happens, and if someone persists in interrupting, that person will be asked to leave the hall. Please remember that these candidates are your friends and neighbors who have stepped forward to serve the community, and they deserve our attention and our courtesy. The format for tonight's debate will be opening statements of 1 minute. We'll begin. The candidates have drawn straws to determine the order. We'll start with Mr. LaRue. We'll have 1 minute for opening questions, opening statements, then we'll move on to the audience questions. At the end, we'll have closing statements of 1 minute, and we'll stop. We'll start at the opposite end with Mr. Dodato. So let's begin our the introduction of our candidates. For your opening statements, candidates, please tell us your qualifications and why you are running for this office. We'll begin with Mr. Bachman. Oh, I'm sorry. Mr. LaRue. I'm looking here. Sorry.
Good evening. My name is Scott LaRue.
I'm looking at my wrong page.
Current resident of Moon Township. I'm a graduate of Washington Jefferson with a degree in accounting. I'm a former divisional CFO with a Fortune 500 company called Fiserv with extensive executive leadership abilities and experience. I've been involved with Moon Township for almost 20 years now. The last 10 years, going on my 11th year, I've served as treasurer of the Moon Township Municipal Authority. I've also served on the school board, as well as the Moon Parks and Recreation, doing volunteer work as a basketball coach, a softball coach. I've been involved with church activities that included volunteer work with Impact Christian Church, with my children. Thank you.
Thank you. Mrs. Gatos?
So my name is Valerie Gatos. I am also I'm running for the State House, and I would like to be your representative. I am a lifelong resident of Allegheny County, third generation. My family, my mother was had a retail shop. My dad was a dentist. My uncle actually taught right here at the Robert Morris College for 30-some years. I have been running. I've been an entrepreneur, and I have been running. I started my own company. I founded several other companies, employed a number of individuals, and my background includes investing in startup companies. I've balanced budgets, done turnarounds, and essentially that, I plan to fight for fiscal responsibility, balance budgets, and be the people's advocate.
Thank you. Mr. Bachman?
Thank you very much. First of all, I want to say thank you to Robert Morris and the League for having this event. Appreciate that. I'm David Bachman. I'm a 1975 graduate of Moon High School and a 1979 graduate of Colgate University with a degree in economics. I've lived most of my life in Moon. Most of my career has been in construction management, both in Pittsburgh and in Houston, Texas, both for small companies and large companies. About 22 years ago, we started our own company, Bachman Builders, which is a home builder, renovator, light construction company. And we've made it through some very, very tough times. And we did that by watching our budget and controlling our budget. For the last 3 years, I've been on the Moon Township Board of Supervisors, and we've also had to do that there. I've asked a lot of very challenging questions to people who present budgets because I want to make sure our budgets are right. And I will say that Moon Township, the Board of Supervisors has taught me what responsible government is supposed to look like. I also have, I'm a past president of the Pennsylvania and the Pittsburgh Builders Association as well. Thank you.
Oh, thank you. Mr. Dodato?
Thank you. I'm Bob Dodato. I'm a township supervisor in North Fayette. I'm a CPA, I have a small tax practice, and I work as a program manager at Highmark with a focus on Medicaid and Medicare quality improvement. I'm a father of two, father of three probably in the next 48 hours. And I've used my background as a CPA to help North Fayette save $1 million in their budget by changing how we do our operations. And I want to take that knowledge to Harrisburg. And I'd like us, as a state, to offer financial literacy in our schools. I'd like to empower our municipalities and our school districts to diversify their revenue sources so that they're not solely focused on property taxes. And I'd like to continue to support the public safety of our communities by supporting our police officers and our fire departments with the resources they need to do their job.
Thank you. Thank you, all our candidates, for being here. We'll move on to our first question. The national, it has a question that has national spotlight on Pennsylvania, of course, is HB 722. It's the gerrymandering in the maps of Pennsylvania. Would you support, if elected, would you support an independent citizens committee to draw the map, to draw the new maps of PA? And this will be a two-part question on gerrymandering, but we'll ask that one first, and we'll start with Mr. LaRue. Oh, I'm sorry, Mrs. Gayes.
Absolutely, I would absolutely support. Right now, the Constitution of Pennsylvania requires that the legislature makes the decision on the redistricting. So I would absolutely support a change in the Constitution to have a fair and balanced way to have an independent commission. Excuse me. To determine the fair and balanced way to determine excuse me. I just yes. So thank you.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Bachman.
I also would support that. I think that it's very important that a district makes sense. And the district makes sense both in terms of the geography of it and also of the neighborhoods that are involved. Not all neighborhoods are the same. And by trying to gerrymander and make them all the same to secure certain parties having certain districts and not other parties having those districts, I think that's wrong. So I would definitely support an independent commission to establish voting districts in the future. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Dodato?
So I believe the other way that we can handle this is by setting parameters for our legislature. We've allowed them to draw it, but we've never given them parameters. And I look at the 44th district, and when I tell people about it, I say there's four school districts: Moon, part of West Allegheny, part of Quaker Valley, and part of Avonworth. And then people realize how gerrymandered it is. Because, you know, God forbid we allow the democratic communities of Oakdale or Leedsdale or Leet to be in the district. So I think we need to set parameters for our legislature that they can only split one school district in any legislative district. I do not want to give an unaccountable appointed body responsibility for drawing our districts. I've seen what that has happened in California, and I've seen the spider web districts that exist in the state of California. Thank you.
Thank you. Before the next question, I have to mention this forum is also being live streamed on RMU TV YouTube page. So the
Mr. LaRue. That's quite all right. I truly believe that if it was possible to have an independent commission, that would be the most ideal solution. However, as we've seen with the State House, State Senate, it tends to go back and forth based on the party that's in control at the time. Given that, there's truly no independent commission in my mind because they're going to be appointed positions. So, in my opinion, the current process was set in place and should be kept in place.
Thank you. A second part of this came, students from Robert Morris gave this question to us. In response to the PA Supreme Court redrawing the state's congressional districts, Republicans in the General Assembly are threatening the justices with impeachment, saying that they went well beyond the their constitutional bounds. If elected, will you advocate for their impeachment? And this one will go to Mr. Bachman first.
Can you repeat the question a little bit louder, please?
The Supreme Court redrew the state's congressional districts. Republicans in the General Assembly are threatening the justices with impeachment, saying that they went well beyond their constitutional bounds. If elected, will you advocate for their impeachment?
I would not. I think that they probably have gone beyond their bounds, and they're probably not doing this correctly, but I don't think that's the avenue to do it. I think you work within the system, you work with other people to get it done. And that's the same reason I do believe an independent commission can be independent. Same as choosing arbitrators. Each side gets a chance to work that out. I think that could be worked out, but I do not think that impeachment is the way to go. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Mr. Donato.
I would not support impeachment for the Supreme Court justices in Pennsylvania. I do not agree with what they did. I think that the Constitution is clear that there is a responsibility to draw the districts that sits with the legislature with a fifth person appointed by the Supreme Court if they cannot agree, the legislature. However, the legislature has that responsibility, and we saw the Supreme Court draw districts, and though that should be no surprise to us because that was what they ran on in 2015. They said they were going to do that, and that is what they did. Elections have consequences, and I think the way if the voters are unhappy with what the Supreme Court did, they will have a chance to deal with that at the ballot box.
Thank you. Mr. LaRue?
I would not support impeachment. This country was founded on checks and balances for a reason. It works. We need to keep those in place. If someone oversteps their bounds, there's another check and balance with the legislature if needed later on, which is why I also believe there shouldn't be an independent counsel. The process was set up to work the way it was, and it's also why our government's one of the longest surviving governments there is.
Thank you.
I would also not support impeachment. I think to echo the other candidates is that absolutely that we have set up a set of checks and balances, and where the problem has come in with the legislature is that the legislature has turned into a body where all the time these folks keep arguing with each other and not solving the problems for the people. It is about time that we elect folks who can have a discussion and not just stick their heels in and fight these fights. Because in the bottom line is that with this the bottom line is this lack of accountability towards the constituents is that it costs the taxpayers money, and this is both in the redistricting and then the fight with the redistricting. So no, I would not support them.
Thank you. We'll begin this question with Mr. Dodato. What measures do you think would be effective to reduce gun violence in America?
So I'm sure the purpose of this question stems from our recent attacks and unfortunate attacks on our schools. As a father, my biggest priority is to make sure that we keep our children safe. And recently, actually 2 days ago, North Fayette Township has authorized the addition of another school resource officer in the West Allegheny School District. That takes our total to 3, and I'm sure in the future we'll add more. I think one of the things we need to do to keep our schools safe is have those school resource officers have metal detectors if necessary to protect our children and keep them safe. I know there's a lot of talk right now about raising gun purchase age to 21 and adding additional training for assault rifles, and that can certainly be part of the conversation. But my priority will be the safety of children, and that starts with keeping our schools safe and secure.
Thank you. Mr. LaRue?
Yes, the goal here is to provide a safe first-class education while utilizing taxpayer funds to the best of their abilities without increasing them. I think what we're seeing now is a lot of reactive approaches instead of proactive. One of the things I would like to see on the proactive side is early intervention with younger children. We have schools that at middle school where there might be 4 grades, there's only 1 or 2 counselors or guidance counselors there. There may only be 1 AIU teacher spread across multiple elementary schools. The funding for that needs to increase in order to catch these mental health issues or issues before they become a problem. And by providing additional counselors, we can treat the problem, be proactive, as opposed to reactive.
Thank you. Mrs. Gatos?
I think it's an absolutely complicated issue. There's no doubt about that, and it's not just simply one solution. One thing I have to say is that I do commend the Moon students for taking the first step and calling on Representative Mustio and Senator Reschenthaler to sit down and meet and talk and not just simply walk out. I think that's what we need to do is have a dialogue, and I think that dialogue needs to include several parts, which, as Scott said, which I would agree, is that there's education, there's intervention, there's bullying issues, there's video game issues, and it needs to be treated as a whole and not in part.
Thank you. Mr. Bachman?
One thing we've talked a lot about, the fact that we all want safe schools, and we do, but I'm not sure that answered the question that you asked. I think that rational, reasonable people can agree on some rational, reasonable ways to address issues. I'm a gun owner, I believe in the Second Amendment, but I think that we can come to terms. We have a president, a Republican president, who's come out against bump stocks. We've had a Republican governor in Florida, a Republican legislature in Florida that have passed some very, I would call them, rational, reasonable rules and trying to make things be a little bit safer. And I think that if I was a 44th district rep, that I would want to consider those. Just to say arbitrarily that it's got nothing to do with it, I think is wrong. There's a lot of things that need to be done. We've talked about things we need to do in schools. But I think we also need to look at what the legislature can do as well. Thank you.
All right, thank you. This is the second part of another question on guns and gun violence. And we'll begin with Mr. LaRue here. What is your position on documentation and publication of gun violence statistics?
Can you be more specific? Is it more specific?
I believe the question is along the line of the CDC not being permitted to do any research on gun violence and how it affects communities.
No, I truly think that's part of the proactive look. You need to be able to have those statistics to address any mental health issues. So yes, I would, but along with that goes is we need to have current systems up to date. There are multiple states that have up to a 2-year backlog of cases, whether they're mental health or criminal cases, that have yet to be uploaded into the federal system for background checks. So that goes part in part with the statistics that need to be looked at.
Thank you. Mrs. Gatos?
I think absolutely to have valid and good and thorough data is absolutely necessary. And I think that goes across the board with almost everything that we as legislators deal with. I think that dealing with having hearings on things, having good data, and then addressing them as a whole. I think we've seen a lot of times in the legislature that you get talking points and people will support one part of the issue or another, and that just compounds the problem. We do need to sit back, get good data, and then act on that data.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Bachman?
I think part of the problem is that a lot of people who are gathering statistics are doing it from a pre-biased standpoint. And so they're bringing statistics that support their viewpoint only. And I think that's been part of the problem with some of the cases that I think you're referencing. I'm not sure exactly what the questionnaire was asking in regard to which study, but there have been some studies that people just try to make it seem like it's all the gun's fault. And I think that coming from that perspective, their statistics may be blurred a little bit. So I think we need to have accurate statistics and allow a lot of different people to debate that. Again, I think we can be reasonable and rational about this.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Nodato?
Yes, I do support accurate statistics. I think that's something that we need to inform the conversation. But to echo what Mr. Bachman said, you know, it's not the gun's fault that's going off by itself. We have a serious mental health issue that we need to deal with. And I've had numerous conversations with teachers and became aware that if a student is 302'd and there is no mental health facility available, that student comes back into the school the next day, not getting the help they need. We need to talk about how to address the mental health crisis, how to make sure we have facilities and funding to treat these individuals, because that is the root of the problem. It was the root of the problem 20 years ago when I was in high school, and the Columbine massacre happened. We have to talk about mental health.
Thank you. The next question is about minimum wage. Pennsylvania currently has a lower minimum wage than other neighboring states. Do you think this is a reason young people leave the state? Would you be open to a moderate raise in order to be more competitive in the region and to keep people, young people in our state? And this first question will go to Mrs. Gatos.
So as a founder of my own company and as an investor in many startup companies, this is actually a problematic issue. I am all about free market and free trade and a sound economy. I think by asking employers to raise their rates just puts an extra burden on companies. And I've actually had companies where you've got five employees and now you've got to raise the rate, there's somebody that is going to lose their job. So while I do support having a sound economy, I do not support a forced minimum wage.
Thank you. Mr. Bachman?
I'd say it's absolutely untrue that people are leaving this state to go to some other state to get a higher minimum wage. People, if they leave the state, it's because there's lack of economic opportunity here, not because they want to earn a dollar more in a higher minimum wage state. I am against the minimum wage being raised. I think it hurts both the employer and the employee. As Valerie said, it's going to mean less jobs. And that doesn't benefit anybody. I'm an employer. I've never hired anybody for minimum wage because I demand more of them and I need them. I think really the question is why are so many people only worth the minimum wage in pure economic terms? And I think that goes back to education. It goes back to lack of training. It goes back to a poor trade school alternative in this country. If you ask any builder, because I'm a home builder, any builder, what the number one problem is they can't find workers. And yet we have people who say that they can't find a job. And I'm not saying either one is not, it can't help the other one. It just has to, we have to come together to do that.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Dodato?
Yes. Well, I don't support a broad-based statewide increase in the minimum wage because it could hurt small businesses. Your local pizza shops that are hiring people to work, maybe high school students, college students, could put them out of work. However, I understand that some of our larger cities where the cost of living is higher, Philadelphia and Pittsburgh, they've been preempted by the state for having their own minimum wage. And as I support the rights of school districts and municipalities and I want to empower them, I would also support allowing Philadelphia and Pittsburgh, a first class and second class city, to have the opportunity if they wanted to do that.
Okay, thank you. Mr. LaRue?
I would oppose an increase in the minimum wage, a forced minimum wage. As stated before, it would hurt the local economies, small businesses. That's what drives our nation and our state, are the small businesses. What you wind up having is you need to pay a fair wage. In a purely economic standpoint, someone's going to work or move on if you're not paying them the fair wage. So each business will have to pay what is appropriate for their workers, otherwise they're going to lose workers by definition. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. The next question will start with Mr. Bachman. What are your plans to address the unfunded liability of the teacher's pension plan, which is currently over $50 billion?
I've heard numbers higher than that. And if we want to boil what needs to be done in Harrisburg down to one question, that's it. Because that's the biggest problem facing the state of Pennsylvania. There's a lot of things that are going to have to be done, but pretending that we don't have this huge problem is not going to be a part of the solution. The state last year passed what I think is a good start, but it doesn't solve the problem. I don't know that I can, in less than a minute, describe all the things that could be done, but I think we have to look at everything. We need to protect our homeowners, because our homeowners are getting really hit with high tax property tax from local school districts trying to pay for this. We have the highest state income tax for corporations, and we have a very high sales tax. We have all these high taxes, and we can't get this funded, so we have to address the spending part of it. And there's a lot of different ways it has to be done, and there's no simple solution to it, but we have to address this problem.
Thank you. Mr. Dodato?
Yes, so we have an issue where our school boards and our state have a funding requirement that they have to meet. And I spoke earlier about allowing school boards the ability to diversify their revenue so it's not solely property taxes and they can shift away from that to help them. As far as the state's concerned, we have a variety of liquor stores that the state has deemed that they need to be in charge of. We can sell those liquor stores, use the initial cost from selling the licenses to pay down the pension debt, and then have the recurring revenue indefinitely from the alcohol licenses to have the privatized liquor stores. And that will get us part of the way there, but you cannot solve a $50 billion deficit in a 60-second answer.
Thank you. Mr. LaRue?
Yeah, and I'll echo that. You're not going to be able to answer this in 60 seconds, but putting a Band-Aid on it, whether it's the putting money from trust from the state, the sale of state liquor stores, $1 billion to $2 billion isn't going to be enough to cover a $72 billion unfunded balance. You've got to make hard decisions, whether that's all new employees go on a 401k or some other defined pension plan while protecting the prior or current employees and maintaining their pension system, that has to be kept intact as well. What's ironic is if you look at the statistics and what they say is a moderately underfunded pension balance, they equate it all the way down to 50% underfunded is considered moderately underfunded. One of the things I've done on the Moon Township Municipal Authority is we've kept ours at 99% funded. So thank you.
Thank you. Mrs. Gatos?
This is one of the biggest problems in Harrisburg, and it is overspending. Overspending not just with pensions, but with expenses. It has gone out of control, and there's nights like this where you have, you know, you're expected to answer a question, as these folks have said also, that in 30 seconds, 60 seconds. That is exactly the problem. We have candidates that come around and they have talking points. Talking points, whether it's been on a television show or whether it's you know, handing out cards or meeting people on the street. These are complicated problems and they deserve more thoughtful approach to addressing them. And you know, we've seen things like from the entrepreneurial community where you see that they'll take issues from other states and then they'll try to impart them here thinking it's part of the solution, and it's not. It is complicated.
Thank you. This next question, we'll have Mr. DiDotto start this response. The Pennsylvania State Legislature passed the Oil and Gas Act back in 2012. It imposed a fee on gas that was distributed into municipalities and counties. Do you believe that fracking is beneficial or harmful?
Well, I think I'm the only one here that has voted to have a lease for our township. We have a township park in North Fayette, and we have a no-drill lease there. So if any of our farmers have their property drilled, the township can get gas royalties from that. So I think that sums up, you know, where I stand as to the benefits of natural gas and what it is doing for this region and revitalizing this region. As with anything, you have to do it and do it safe. But let's keep in mind, they're drilling 12,000 feet underground, and our water tables are around 6,000 feet. As far as the impact fee, I know that has benefited local municipalities because they're the ones that bear the brunt of any of the drillers and their equipment and their vehicles on the roads. And I think that was a great way to make sure the municipalities have a source of revenue to deal with any challenges they face to their roads as part of the drilling.
Do you feel there's any harm in it? See it as more beneficial then?
I see it as more beneficial.
Okay, thank you. Mr. LaRue?
I see it as beneficial when it's done environmentally safe. What you're looking at is not the gas companies per se making all the money, it's the surrounding businesses and the supporting infrastructure that really drive the local economies, whether it's the mom and pop pipe fitters, the pump stations, the supplies that are provided to the gas and oil companies. That's truly what's driving the economy in our region. So, in short answer, yes, I think it's beneficial when done safely.
Okay, thank you. Mrs. Gatos?
Absolutely. I also think that the industry has been very beneficial to Pennsylvania. I think what we have to address is, you know, not punishing companies that are trying to come in here and have jobs. I think we need to regulated in some ways. I think that, as the previous candidates have said, that we have to do it safely, and I think that there's ways to address that. But the bottom line is that it's all about jobs, and you know, if we can look at other ways not to tax and other companies into the state, we shouldn't be treating these companies that are trying to create jobs as demons in this in this state.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Bachman?
The two biggest dangers of fracking are the fracking water, and most of that now is being recycled. It's very controlled by the state, as it should be. The second biggest thing is methane leakage from the wells, and fortunately the companies have an economic advantage and incentive to control that methane, because that's what they're after. So there's really no significant long-term or short-term environmental damage, if that's what the question is asking. Is it a benefit? You'd have to have your head in the sand not to know it's a benefit to everybody. My wife's a realtor. She sold a lot of people homes that are moving in from Houston, Texas. Coincidence. And myself, my company did a major project for an executive working for the Shell Corporation in down in Beaver. All right. Every one of the pickup trucks in my job represents a family, perhaps two families. Maybe that's a raise, maybe that's a kid's tuition. That's something we're all benefiting from. This is a tremendous advantage to our economy to have it, and we should not chase it away.
Okay, thank you. The next question deals with infrastructure. Mr. LaRue will give the first response. Infrastructure includes roads, bridges, canals, locks, and many other things. What is your priority, and would you support a special tax for that purpose? Infrastructure.
No, I would not support a special tax. That the state has high enough taxes as it is, whether it's property taxes or income tax. We've talked about this, or candidates have mentioned this before. We need to address Harrisburg and the problems there with the overspending and not utilizing every dollar. Whether it's per diems that the legislatures get reimbursed for as opposed to actual expenses, that's the easiest thing to look at, as opposed to getting $160 to $180 a day, have them turn in actual expenses. You start digging into these things, and as a former CFO, I'm used to looking at the financial statements and where to find money. I took one company as an interim CEO from a $4 million loss to a $1 million profit in 12 months. Thank you.
Oh, thank you. Mrs. Gatos?
So, could you repeat the question, please?
Sure. It deals with infrastructure, and what would be a priority within infrastructure? The question includes roads, bridges, et cetera.
So,
would you support a special tax for
sure.
that priority, whatever your priority
would be?
So I would
not support a special tax. I'm generally against any additional taxes. We've been taxed enough. The problem is really on a local level, that we're looking at the infrastructure. We're ignoring a lot of these local townships are forced to pave streets only because of what people see, and we're ignoring the stuff that's underneath the ground. We do have a crumbling infrastructure, and it's almost a bigger disaster heading down the pike than the pension crisis, because we're looking, particularly in the airport area, they're looking at doing new and building new, encouraging the business here. But when you have a crumbling infrastructure underneath the ground, you can't build on top of it. So I would be opposed to a tax, but I think we have to look at these things as a whole and not just try to patch things up, which seems to be happening.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Bachman?
I, again, would absolutely not be for yet one more tax. We have plenty of taxes. If properly applied and properly used, it could solve this issue. Pennsylvania has, for one thing, has a Turnpike Commission and has PennDOT. I think we would need to question whether or not we need two road departments. But the main thing I would say is to echo and to sound like Ross Perot, the devil's in the details. In my business, I have to get into the details. There's smaller details, but you look at everything and what it takes to get something done and what you can cut and what you can get by without this year and put on the next year. As the Moon Township Supervisor, again, I was fortunate to come on to a very well-run board, but yet I constantly want to challenge different expenditure proposals in every year's budget, because the people who present those budgets, they're not the ones that are paying for it, the taxpayers are. So I think if we really look at every detail, very closely. We can do this without raising taxes and do a better job, too. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Dodato?
I agree we are taxed enough, and I, quite frankly, I believe that the transportation bill that passed several years ago, we saw an increase in our gas tax for just that, to expand infrastructure. I know we've seen many projects around here, such as the Finley Connector, that have resulted from that. If the concern is infrastructure spending, I know that as a supervisor, we have a road paving program in North Fayette, that every road will be paved over the next 30 years. And in order to cover those costs, we had to look at our budget and find ways to do operations differently. And we did that by changing how we sold our roads, how we buy our health insurance, and restructuring our debt. And those are the kind of decisions we have to make at the state level, changing how we do operations so we can fund what we need to improve our state.
Okay, thank you. The next question, Mrs. Gatos will respond first. Do you support term limits? Would you self-impose term limits?
I would absolutely self-impose term limits. I am not a career politician. I have never run for elective office. I think we need more people who are business folks who are in there, who have been proven job creators. I will support term limits, because I think that when we have individuals who are there for a lifetime, it creates a lot of problems. But I also think that in addition to having term limits, there should be term limits for staff. Because what happens is that you've got your legislators who come and go, but you've got your career staff who then take naive legislators who come in, and they're actually running the show, and they're actually less accountable. But yes, I would support term limits, and I would self-impose.
Thank you. Mr. Bachman?
I would support term limits. I think that too often people would become more concerned about re-election than they do about serving the people that elected them in the first place. I'm going to say I am not going to serve any more than 3 terms. And I think that after that, anybody should move on to something else in the political arena, or come back to the private life. This is not supposed to be a full-time job. We're supposed to be in touch with our private lives and our private businesses and our private careers. And to become a full-time politician, I think, is one of the worst things that somebody can do if you're trying to get things done for the people. So I would absolutely support term limits.
Great, thank you. Mr. Dodato?
Yes, I would support term limits as well. And I do think that there's also a great point that Valerie pointed out with the staff. If you're going to limit the legislatures, you also need to limit the staff, because they will start to run the show. As far as being concerned about being reelected, that is, I think, a good part of our republic, is that when you have your elected officials fear the public, then you have liberty. And one of the things that I know is, as a supervisor, my decisions that I make are accountable to the taxpayers, the residents of North Fayette. And if they don't like what I'm doing, they can fire me when I'm up for re-election. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. LaRue?
Yes, I would also absolutely support term limits. And along with that, I would also support reducing the size of the legislature. And if that means my position is gone due through to redistricting, so be it. I would agree with Dave. It's not here as a full-time job. It's to serve your community and make your community better and work with other communities to get that done.
Okay, thank you. The next question comes from our students, Robert Morris students. Pennsylvania has received a lot of tax dollars from gambling expansion. Yet this has the potential to create problems for many of the state's residents. What actions are and should be taken to help people who have gambling problems in the state? Is Pennsylvania harming its residents at the expense of increased state revenue? And we'll begin this question. It's for you, Mr. Bachman.
I think there's obviously a lot of harm that can be done with gambling. Every advertisement for a gambling casino has at the end a disclaimer: gambling problems cause something. Without a doubt, people have problems with gambling. I have a question, from a moral perspective, whether that's the right thing to do, but yet this is a free society. So if people want to gamble, they should have the right. But how much the state should support that and expand that is very much in doubt in my mind. I will say this, that I think that it's the the case now, that the gambling casinos and the gambling establishments are paying a tax toward the benefit of a gambler's treatment program. That should probably be increased depending on the need for that. But I think we have enough gambling opportunities now. I don't think we need to be expanding too much. And like Bob said about the liquor stores, we can get maybe some more money for that, but that'll never solve the pension problem alone. It's not the panacea either for us.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Dodato, same question?
Yes. So I agree that we have plenty of gambling opportunities in this state, and I think only adding to that, we could see the negative ramifications. That being said, I wouldn't take away what we have right now. I would allow what's in place to exist. And if we have more costs associated with treating gambling addicts, then we need to make sure the casinos are paying a higher rate to treat that. I do respect liberty. People are allowed to make their own decisions, but I don't like the idea of a state or a city balancing their budget on gambling revenue, because that is not a stable source of funding.
All right, thank you. Mr. LaRue?
I'm gonna take it a little bit further. I'm actually a supporter of what Mr. Mustio was trying to do with the VGTs and the small businesses within the state. It's a lot of what was going on in the back rooms. We saw it with Prohibition. They're going on anyway. We should legalize the VGTs. Would I expand to larger casinos? No, but I would be for the VGT being included in local establishments to create additional revenue for the state.
Okay, thank you. Mrs. Gatos?
I think statistics have shown that when you expand gambling, it really just waters down the number of the amount of revenue that's coming in from the surrounding states and surrounding areas. I would not support the expansion of gambling, but in terms of letting the statistics show for themselves, and if it were, I think that what ends up happening is that the states really aren't generating the revenue that they're anticipating from that. So I think that it ends up being a wash.
Okay, thank you. The next question is going to deal with criminal justice reform. And Mr. Dodato, you'll give us your first response to this question from the audience. Massachusetts State Legislature has just passed the criminal justice reform bill last Wednesday. It seemingly wants to focus on rehabilitation and substance abuse treatment. Do you think that this type of reform will reduce recidivism? Would this be beneficial in Pennsylvania?
I would certainly be willing to look at the opportunity to rehabilitate those individuals that are in our prisons. But at the same token, I think we need to bring back mandatory minimums. They served as a deterrent. Our police forces needed them, and it would help us improve the safety of our communities as well as our state.
Okay, thank you. Mr. LaRue?
I'm going to agree with Bob. I think we can do reform where it's needed. But we do definitely need the mandatory minimum sentencing in this state. It's more of a deterrent than anything else. And again, it gets back to being proactive as opposed to reactive.
Okay, thank you.
I would absolutely agree with all that. I don't think it's much more complicated than that, is that we have to support mandatory minimums, without a doubt.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Bachman?
I would definitely believe that we need mandatory minimums, without a doubt. I don't want people who keep on committing the same crime not to do time, not to be punished for it, not to make the people safe who they've been committing the crimes around. But I do think there's one solution that we need to improve on, and that is we need to allow state money to be used in faith-based programs to help a lot of these people. I know that I've done a lot of work with inner city youth, and you have tremendous opportunity if you have some government money that can go to help people who have their pulse in the community and have their feet on the ground in those communities. But right now it's very difficult for them to get funding to do what they want to do. So I think an increase in faith-based funding for organizations would make a big difference in solving that problem. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Yeah, there was a lot of the treatment, though, of substance use, I believe. Can we go around, and we'll start with Mr. LaRue here. What about funding for treating addicts and with a new with the opioid crisis. Now that's one of the hot topics these days too. Do you support or not support the treatment of substance abuse addicts?
For substance abusers, it's a huge problem in the state and nationally. It needs to be addressed locally, it needs to be addressed regionally, and it needs to be addressed at the state level. It's no different than addressing issues with the underfunding of Medicare. We need to look at things where we can do things better, more efficiently, and support the people in the state.
Okay, Mrs. Gatos.
I think this also comes back to the questions we were talking about before, is that it comes down to really good data. And I think the thing is that we need to address the data that we have that tracks all of this. That's how you solve the problems. And so I would absolutely support looking into the details on this and for treatment, yes.
Mr. Bachman?
I think, again, one of the solutions could be more faith-based people, especially in something like this. You know, we have all kinds of different 12-step programs, but they work better in faith-based environments, and I think that I'd like to see some more support for that as well, not just one system, because it doesn't always fit. Every addict doesn't recover in the same way. This is part of, and I think the question is referring to the opioid thing, mm-hmm. and that's a huge issue. We haven't talked about it much, but there's a lot of things that need to be done with that. I know the legislature passed a law recently limiting the amount of opioids that can be prescribed, because I believe that the overprescription is the beginning of that problem. And I'm not normally one to have the government want to control how, you know, medicine treats their people, but this is a case I think it had to be done. And I would, as a legislator, I'd want to tackle those tough solutions, because that's a big problem.
Okay, Mr. Dodaro.
Yes, I indicated before that I would support looking at treatment, and I would also agree that faith-based treatment is a great opportunity as well. However, if we're looking at the big picture, and these individuals that become addicted on substance, making sure we take care of the victims is important, but we have to be tough on the perpetrators if we want to be serious about this problem.
Okay, thank you. Staying with criminal justice, we have a question regarding bail, and Mrs. Gatos, you'll be the first to respond. Regarding bail, should ability to pay be a factor in setting bail? And the second part of the question is, how should for-profit commercial bail companies be managed in PA? And I can repeat both questions as we go if you need me to.
Yeah, I should repeat the question.
The first one is, should ability to pay be a factor in setting the bail?
So I think that the short answer is yes, because I think the thing is that that factor, every criminal is going to be addressed, should be addressed individually. And so when setting bails, it should matter what level of crime it is, and as well as their ability to pay, because we know that in later part of the criminal justice system, that when these folks will skip bail, it's because they know it's not a big issue to them. So I think it should be proportional.
And how should for-profit commercial bail companies be managed?
I believe in the free market. So I think that I believe in the free market, and I think that they should run like any other business.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Bachman.
I think that if you look at it, the judge who sets the bail looks at a lot of criteria. You know, the danger of that criminal fleeing. The danger of what that criminal to do to other people if released, and the ability to pay can be one of them. But I don't think that should be the main reason. The main reason that judge is there is because he or she is supposed to have the wherewithal to be able to determine what that bail should be. As far as managing bail companies, it's a free market. They need to do what they need to do, as long as they're obeying the law. And they're performing a very valuable function in society. So no, I don't want to see them regulated anymore.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Dodaro?
Yes, so is the question, do we need to authorize judges to consider ability to pay as part of when they set the bail?
Yes.
Okay. I would support allowing a judge to consider that amongst a variety of factors. And as far as the bail bonds, I will echo the sentiments of my colleagues here that it's the private sector. They're performing a function that is needed in our society, and as long as they're operating within the confines of the law, that's fine.
Okay, thank you. Mr. LaRue?
Yes, I think the ability to pay is already taken into consideration by a lot of judges. It's dependent on flight risk a lot of times. Would I expand that to more legislative approach to mandate certain things? No, I would not. Our government was set up based on the segregation of duties. And the judicial system has their own set of regulations and guidelines as far as what needs to be done. And as far as the for-profit bail companies, I think they should be left alone. I would agree that they've been regulated enough, and it's a free market society.
Okay, thank you. The next question is on public education. Mr. Bachman, we'll start with you. What is your policy on funding public education? What is your stance on charter schools and vouchers?
60 seconds for all that. I would say, as far as funding it, we cannot keep increasing the property tax. It's not fair to our seniors. I've knocked on a lot of doors, and the one good thing about knocking on the door of a senior, they're normally home. And they're home, but they want to stay in that home. And property taxes are way too high. There can be no question about that. So, but if we don't get it from there, where do we get it? And there's a big debate. Do we go to a sales tax increase? Do we tax all consumables and not just, you know, the ones that are sales tax now? I think we have to look at all of that. But we can't talk about how we're going to pay for it without controlling the cost of it. Governor Wolf wanted to raise, in his proposal, education 11% over the next 2 years, each year. That's like 10 times the rate of inflation. That kind of thinking cannot work. There's no amount of taxes that somebody can dream up that can pay for that kind of increase. We need to control the costs, and I didn't get a chance to answer all the questions. Maybe we can come back to that.
Well, we can come back. I can ask that again, so we'll just do the first part. What is your policy on funding public education?
Okay. So I'm a strong believer in local control for our schools, and I want to make sure that we can empower our school boards to fund the education the way they need to. Right now, the only option they have is property taxes. Those school boards, they don't get elected and determine that they want to raise property taxes and send seniors out of their homes. That's their only option, is to raise property taxes. We have bills that have been proposed in the legislature by Jason Ortizai that would allow school districts and municipalities and give them the opportunity to tax a variety of other things as a revenue neutral way to transfer away from property tax. And that way you leave that with the local control instead of taking the money, putting it in a little kitty in Harrisburg and hoping it all comes back.
Okay, thank you. Mr. LaRue?
I would agree. I'm all for local taxing bodies controlling their future as far as whether it be schools or municipalities. The one thing we don't want to do is transfer this money to Harrisburg. We've all seen what can happen there when they don't even balance their own budget. Now we're moving more money up there. The biggest thing that people don't realize is it needs to be looked as a holistic approach, because it's not just taxes. Everything feeds into this. And one of the things I learned on the school board was, I think currently we're paying 37% of every salary dollar to feed the pension system. That's huge. And that's what's why the taxes keep going up. They can raise taxes to the fullest amount, yet they can't keep pace with the pension system. So not one solution is going to address it. We need to look at this holistically.
Okay, thank you.
I would echo the sentiments of my colleagues here. I sat on the Pennsylvania Business Council board, where we put together something called the scorecard. And the scorecard looked at not only just taxes, looked at schools, looked at other job incentives that are in the state of Pennsylvania. You can actually look this up in online. It's the Pennsylvania Business Council put together something called the scorecard. What it does is it encourages our legislators to look at this as Scott said, as a holistic approach, because the question is not how you pay for these things with raising a tax here or raising a tax there, because you have to offset it somehow. And that has been the problem with the legislature right now, is overspending and then just shifting the taxes to somebody else where it's going to create a problem another day. This has to be looked at holistically, and it has to be with good data.
Great, thank you. And we'll go back to the second part of this question. Mr. DiDotto, what is your stance on charter schools and vouchers?
Okay, so vouchers and charter schools are, charter schools are in existence, vouchers are something that some people have advocated for. I oppose vouchers. I don't think that is how our public education system was intended. It was intended to have a community that supports their local school and invests in their local school. I have serious concerns about when you start giving money to a Christian or a Jewish school or a Catholic school because of the requirements that will follow that. And I'm a Christian. I went to Geneva College, but I have concerns with vouchers. As far as charter schools, they're in existence. They are certainly a part of the education opportunity that people have, but we need to look at making some reforms because they are bleeding our school districts. And some of those reforms, at simplest, any charter or cyber school needs to take the Keystone exams. We can't have a set of standards for our public schools that charter and cyber schools don't meet.
Thank you. Mr. LaRue?
I would echo a lot of what Mr. DiDotto had said here just a minute ago. One of the bigger problems is with the charter schools or a lot of the other schools is they're for-profit where your public schools are not. So there's a huge disconnect where the funds are being shifted away from public schools. I see that as a big issue and one that needs to be looked at before we can even solve whether we have vouchers to go here or go there. I know other states have done that, but as Valerie said, we can't just look at other states and say, it worked there, let's make it work here. It doesn't happen like that. So.
Thank you.
Mrs. Yeah, I wouldn't really say anything differently. I think that my colleagues have said that pretty succinctly, is that a lot of times that they'll point out a particular charter school that has not done well, let's say, and point to that these charter schools are not working out. But there are some charter schools that are exceeding the parameters and the success and having kids excel. So I don't think that we can look at these and throw them all into one lump and say that this is bad or this is good. I think there needs to be a more refined approach to how we look at these these alternatives to encouraging competition in the school districts.
Thank you. Mr. Bachman?
I'm going to take a different stand here. And I'm going to point out that in this country, our universities, it's a tremendous draw. Robert Morris is a tremendous draw for foreign students because we have freedom of choice in the university system. We don't have freedom of choice in our high schools, and our high schools are not world class. Far from it. I mentioned I've spent about 15 years doing a lot of inner city work with inner city kids in the north side of Pittsburgh. It is wrong that we don't have those kids educated better. So I am going to say I am for vouchers, at least for failing schools. Something has to be done. The free market has allowed colleges like Robert Morris, which is a different kind of college, to do very, very well. And it's a very competitive college. The same choices need to be offered to our most vulnerable children. And if a voucher is what it needs, we'll do that. Charter schools do work in the city. I've worked with a lot of kids that do. They should be tested, if I can fit that all in. Thank you.
Thank you. We have another question from the political science students here at Robert Morris. And we'll begin with Mr. LaRue here for this question. As a pro-life advocate, what specifically do you propose to do to help stop abortions? Could adoption be made more desirable, more funding given to sex education, or contraceptives made more affordable?
I am definitely pro-life. Life begins at conception. And it all comes down to education and teaching. And there's been some things that say, should we promote more teaching in class around contraceptive use? The first thing I believe does come more from abstinence and not from advocating the use of contraceptives. One of the big things that we have in our region down in Coraopolis is a program called Choices that advocates different avenues and not abortion. I've donated into that every year. I am a true believer of that. I think that answers the question.
Okay, thank you. Mrs. Gatos?
I absolutely think that, well, first of all, I am pro-life. I think that that we need more education on this topic. I think that that when I had a, and this is a personal story, that I had a friend of mine who had children born at 26 weeks. And I think a number of people said that they were concerned about, you know, how these children will turn out. And they were absolutely beautiful children. So you cannot convince me that you know, that these lives are important or not important. And but I think education is a large portion of that. I don't think anyone's life has been improved by having an abortion. And I have another friend of mine who is a family court judge, and she said that she said to me that those who have actually put up children for adoption have gotten their lives in order, and those who have had alternate choices just continue to make those mistakes over and over again. So education is absolutely necessary.
Thank you. Mr. Bachman?
I know a lot of people have adopted, and I think that there is a shortage of babies for adoption in this country. I think that if a woman is finds herself pregnant with an unwanted pregnancy, I think she should bring that baby to term, and I think she should be able to put it up for adoption. If there's hindrances that the government can do that unhinder that, we should do that. We should make it easier for adoptions, but I don't think the lack of adoption ability or the freedom of adoption is what's causing people to have abortions. I also think that, you know, we talked about, or your question referenced the facts of contraceptives. That should be a private affair. I don't think that anybody should mandate a company to cover contraceptives if they don't want to. And my company, you know, whatever health system you want to get, you can do it. But the Catholic Church, for instance, should not be made to pay for contraceptives if they don't believe it.
Thank you. Mr. Dodato?
Sure. I'm going to take a small part of my time to address a comment that Mr. Bachman made about vouchers. To say that school vouchers and college is the same thing is comparing apples and oranges. You're taking what 18-year-old adults do when they select a school for higher education and trying to translate that into what a 5-year-old could do. My wife and I have served as foster parents, and we've seen children come from some pretty bad conditions. And as a result of those bad conditions, you know that those parents are not going to be able to make the decisions about where to send their children to school. And we need to make sure when it comes to education, we are taking care of every child. And with the 15 seconds that I have left, I will say that I'm solidly pro-life. I am a big supporter of Choices Pregnancy Center. 70% of the reason a woman has, 70% of abortions are because the woman does not have the financial capabilities. We need to continue to support crisis pregnancy centers.
Thank you. This will be our last question, and again, it comes from the students here at Robert Morris. And Mrs. Gatos, you'll be the first to respond. What is your opinion on sanctuary cities in Pennsylvania, as we see a push from our federal government to crack down on illegal immigration?
Well, first of all, the simple answer is I'm opposed to sanctuary cities. I think that you know, we have to have these criminals that are there, that they need to be addressed. My grandparents came to this country, and they came here legally. They came here. They worked. I think we need to have the same expectations for everybody in this nation.
Thank you. Mr. Bachman?
I'm absolutely against local governments defying the state and defying the national government with sanctuary cities. That's wrong. We have a federal government. We need to obey the laws of the federal government in terms of immigration into this country and deportation if you're a criminal. I also do want to take some time to respond to what Bob mentioned. I agree that there's a difference, but yet I think one thing that's common with all people everywhere is that parents want what's better for their children. They want a better life for their children. And the mother of that 5-year-old child may not know what we know, but that mother ought to have the right to send her kid to a school that kid can learn how to read and write, just like a suburban kid. So from that standpoint, I don't want to penalize that mother who who just happens to be a single mother, a minority single mother in a poor part of the town, just because that's where she is when she has that child. That child should have just as much right as my children.
Thank you. Mr. Nadano?
I'm going to take a moment to respond to Mr. Bachman's comments. So I would encourage Mr. Bachman to speak with some teachers that teach in these poverty-stricken school districts to learn about some of the challenges that they deal with. Because it is not that all parents are engaged and interested. Part of the problem teachers face is parents that are unengaged, parents that are battling alcohol abuse. And to just leave that to whim, to just let them figure out whatever school is best, no. We need to invest in public education to make sure what George W. Bush signed into law, that no child is left behind. And that's the reason why he had that bill, is so that all children can succeed.
Sanctuary City.
Any time left for him?
Thank you.
He has any time
as
left.
As far as sanctuary cities are concerned, you know, when you take an oath as an elected official, you take an oath to uphold the Constitution. And I don't agree with what these local municipalities have done, blatantly defying what the Constitution said. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Mr. LaRue.
I'll make my turn simple. I am opposed to the sanctuary cities. They shouldn't go against the federal government and the standards, as Bob was just saying. Especially when you're looking at criminals, and I happened to watch a C-SPAN recording a couple nights ago about the statistics of how many criminals were reintroduced back into society instead of being deported, and it was 140-some thousand over a two-year window that had been convicted of a criminal crime were then, instead of being deported, put back into society in those cities. So that to me is just ridiculous, especially when we're talking about mandatory minimums and things of that nature. So we do need to address that, the issue.
Thank you. Again, that was our last question for the evening. I would like to remind everybody again, if you want to see their responses, the candidates' responses to some more questions, they have submitted their answers to Vote 411, which will be up and running in a week. It's an online voter's guide. You go to the site, type in your zip code, and then your primary ballot will appear with the candidates, with your candidates, and then you can put them side by side and compare their answers to questions. Yeah. I know. I'm getting to that. That's okay. We're going to start now with our closing statements. And we're going to begin, we'll start at the opposite end with Mr. Donato.
Thank you. Thank you all for attending tonight. And like I said, I'm running because I want to make sure we make the right decisions, not for everyone in this room, but also for the next generation. And I will tell you that as a supervisor, I listened to the voters and I listened to the people that I work with. And I will do the same as a state representative. When our police chief approached myself and my fellow supervisors in 2013 about adding a second detective, we were all leery because no other municipality had done that, and it was an extra body on the police force. But we said, okay, we'll do it. And as a result, the North Fayette Police Department has been able to be on the front lines combating the opioid epidemic so much that the Attorney General, Josh Shapiro, came to North Fayette to honor our police force. Myself and my fellow supervisors listened to our police chief, and just like I listened to Mark O'Donnell, I will listen to you and I will seek your input if elected. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Bachman?
Thank you. I'd like to first thank you my three other opponents here, and I will say that I appreciate it, the way we've interacted tonight, and I will say that after May 15th, I will support whichever one of us wins. But that being said, I believe I'm the best candidate because I have the best background in terms of addressing budgets. We've talked about spending for schools. We've talked about spending for infrastructure there's been so many questions about where we're going to spend money, but we haven't talked much about how we're going to control budgets. Because if we can't control the budget in Harrisburg, there is not enough money to keep on spending on the good things we need done. So I've been doing this. I did it at the Builders Association. I've done it in my own business, and I've done it at and not-for-profits that I've worked with, and I've done it in Moon Township. So That's the kind of atmosphere that I want to go to Harrisburg to address, is the spending problem and how we can control that budget.
Thank you. Mrs. Gatos.
Thank you. And again, thank you for hosting this. I really appreciate this. Number one, I'm not a career politician. I've been running my own business for 25 years. I founded my own business. It was a database company. We sold data to PricewaterhouseCoopers. We've talked about the importance of having good data, and I frankly think that our legislature seems to create their own data and just push issues out there. I believe in good data. That's how I made my living. I also invested in other companies. I invested in a company that sold to Intel. I am self-funding, so I believe that I am. What sets me apart is that I don't have talking points that have been given to me by Harrisburg lobbyists or other folks or other legislators. I am an independent candidate, and I think what better way to create jobs is to send an actual job creator to Harrisburg.
Thank you. And finally, Mr. LaRue.
Yes, I'd like to say thank you to RMU, the League of Women Voters, and more specifically, the Armed Forces and the police and the firemen. They're what made this country what it is from a democracy standpoint, so I really like to thank them. When you look at experience, and we all have our own qualifications, and we all do a great job, and as Dave said, I'll support whoever wins the election. That's key. But when you look at experience, and Dave mentioned controlling budgets, yes, he has that experience, but when you look at the size, I was a CFO with a $200 million budget with six companies that reported directly up through that structure. I've also been on the Municipal Authority Board. We did a $15 million investment over the last 7 years while still having the lowest rates in the region for water and sewer. So when you look at that and the leadership experience, I think I'm the best candidate.
Thank you. Well, that concludes our forum for this evening. I'd like to thank everybody for being here and for being such an attentive audience. Also, again, thank you to Robert Morris University for hosting, Dr. Philip Harold and his political science students for attending and helping us out for this great debate. And of course, we'd like to thank the candidates. Can we give them a round of applause, please? Remember, your vote is your voice, and that every vote matters, so please, please go out, take a friend, take your neighbors, and vote on Tuesday, May 15th. Thank you.
Good discourse.